Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, July 6th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
President Robert Mugabe reshuffled his cabinet today and, as expected, moved Information Minister Jonathan Moyo to the Minister of Higher Education.
I am still the Minister of Public Service, Labour and Social Welfare. I am just acting Minister of Media and Information.
Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa is in China for what the state media is calling follow-ups on the so-called mega deals signed between the two nations last year.
All we know from economic studies is that, in effect, China has been milking Zimbabwe's economy and Zimbabwe's natural wealth in a way that is not equaled by what Zimbabwe gets out of China.
Controversial veteran Freedom Nyambaya has died.
And South Africans and Zimbabweans say the late Soul Brothers founder and lead singer David Masondo will be greatly missed.
Very bad because we've been together with these guys for like 40 years.
These stories and much, much more coming up.
President Robert Mugabe reshuffled his cabinet today and is expected, moved Information Minister Jonathan Moyo to the Ministry of Higher Education. Moyo and other ministers were sworn in at the State House this afternoon. Former Home Affairs Minister Kembo Mohadi is now responsible for state security and is being replaced by former Local Government Minister Ignatius Chombo. Former Environment Minister Xavier Kasukuwere becomes the Local Government Minister, and former Higher Education Minister Opam Chinguri is the new Environment Minister. Opam Chinguri Kashiri has replaced Kasukuwere.
Nyasha Chikwinya is the new Minister of Women's Affairs, and retired Brigadier Ambrose Mutiniri replaces Joel Bigi Matiza as the Mashonaland East Minister of State. Labour Minister Priska Mfumira replaces Moyo as the Minister of Information in an acting capacity. She tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu, Mr. Mugabe is yet to come up with a suitable candidate and she will for now hold fort.
I am still the Minister of Public Service, Labour and Social Welfare. I am just acting Minister of Media and Information until the appointment is made by His Excellency the President.
Do you know when this is going to happen, the new appointment?
I'm not aware.
But at the moment, would you say you'll be able to carry out work at the two ministries successfully? Is this something that you have done before?
I think it's possible. You know, we have permanent people, the civil servants, who work in the ministry, who are in both ministries, and my role will be oversight. So I don't see any challenges at all. And the communication is my field anyway, so I shouldn't find a problem in handling the two ministries for an interim period.
That was Labour Minister Priska Mfumira, also acting Minister of Information, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
MTC spokesman Obed Gutu called the reshuffle, quote, more of the same, adding that Zimbabwe is heading towards a complete collapse. Political analyst and director of the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, Bedzisai Ruhanya, says the moving of Moyo to the education portfolio might be a good move, as he's a renowned academic who can shake up things in the ministry.
But Zimbabwe independent editor Dumisani Mulea tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu the reshuffle was clearly targeting Moyo.
It seems like it's a politically motivated move rather than a decision that is informed by the need to improve the team and improve delivery in terms of social services, running economy and managing the country. It's quite clearly more centered around moving Jonathan Moyo away from the Minister of Information to the Minister of for higher education, something that we know in terms of the ZANU-PF factional dynamics. This is not the first time it was tried. Sometime last December, the ZANU-PF faction headed by Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, they wanted to move into that ministry. So finally they succeeded. So it's just a calculated political move rather than a delivery-oriented decision.
But why is it that the Mnangagwa faction might be no longer at ease with Moyo controlling information?
Well, basically because post the ZANU-PF Congress in December 2014, which is last December, Moyo quite clearly, in terms of how he has used the control and direction of the state media, he was not broadcasting corporation, he was in papers and other associated platforms. It has been seen to be hostile, really, or perceived to be hostile to the faction led by Mnangagwa. So they were not comforted with him remaining in that position. We saw that sometime soon after Congress when Minister Josiah Ungwe did say Mnangagwa was kind of man. It was not more directly responded to that, but it was the Herald, the friendship of the state controlled media, saying, rebuffing that. Basically, that indicated the attitude of the minister in charge at that particular time. It was Moyo. And then we saw Moyo, and most recently in BBC, contesting season 2, claim that Mnangagwa could be the next in line to succeed Mugabe. So his attitude towards the Mnangagwa group would have influenced his removal from there, because they see him as somebody who is not an ally anymore as it was in the past, but as a threat to their ambition.
That was Zimbabwe Independent editor Dumisani Muleya speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa is in China for what the state media is calling follow-ups on the so-called mega deals signed between the two nations last year. Mnangagwa left Harare yesterday in the company of Industry Minister Mike Bima and Small Businesses Minister Stembiso Nyoni. The state-owned Herald newspaper says Mnangagwa will sign several business agreements with China in addition to those already signed by President Mugabe last year. Critics have questioned Zimbabwe's Look East policy, saying not much has been derived since its adoption several years ago. Is there anything solid that the country has benefited from China? Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo posed that question to political analyst Dr. Nkululeko Sibanda of Huddersfield University in England.
I think that as of yet, there hasn't anything tangible coming out of the deals that we're doing with China. All we know from economic studies is that, in effect, China has been milking Zimbabwe's economy and Zimbabwe's natural wealth in a way that is not equaled by what Zimbabwe gets out of China. And the services that we're getting out of China in more than many ways are out of standard, are below standards compared to the services that China provides for other nations and Western countries. So certainly it is yet to be discovered whether or not this consolidation by VP Mnangagwa and his entourage is going to bring anything tangible out of those deals.
If the so-called Look East policy is not that beneficial, why not look elsewhere?
Well, certainly we know that for President Mugabe, the biggest problem is really, and his biggest focus is certainly not on the economy. His biggest focus is political. It is about maintaining his position. If it was, then it is very clear, like any other country on earth, dealing in economics should be done with all nations on earth where it is more beneficial. And dealing with just one side or one country or one hemisphere in politics is a problem that you don't give that side competition and therefore force it to improve on its relations with you and on its deals with you.
That was Dr. Nkululeko Sibanda, a political analyst and lecturer at the Huddersfield University in England, speaking with Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo.
The Harare City Council says registered vendors have started taking up approved vending sites around the city as it puts final touches to the rest of the bays. Spokesman Michael Chideme says out of more than 100 identified sites, 15 are ready for use, where vendors will be paying $1.25 per day. Chideme says so far there are 7,000 registered vendors out of the estimated more than 20,000 who are operating in the Central Business District. He tells Studio 7 his council will not use force in dealing with the vendors, but will be guided by the vending bylaws of 2014.
As a city, we are saying people should go to the approved sites and start trading from there. We already have people who are trading from the approved sites. So we are saying for those sites which are approved and people are not yet there, people should go there and start doing business from those sites.
How are these vendors getting these sites? Do they allocate themselves or the council is doing that?
The vending stores allocated by council, because council is the authority, is the land authority in Harare. So council allocates to all the vendors.
How many vending sites do you have?
We have a lot of vending sites in Harare, more than 100 of vending sites in Harare. But the ones that we are talking about at the moment are the 15 within the CBD, right? So we are saying for those CBD sites, people should be on site before we actually roll out the whole program to the suburbs, where we will also issue vendor cards to people who are at all the vending sites in Harare. But the particular ones we're talking about now are the 15 in and around the CBD.
There are some vendors who are saying they are going to resist moving out of the CBD. What are you going to do with them?
Okay. Harare City Council has bylaws, and we expect all our residents to follow the bylaws. The vending bylaws of 2014 states that vending should be done from the designated site. This is what we are implementing. We are implementing our bylaws.
That was Harare City Council spokesman Michael Chideme. National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe Director Samuel Wadzai said there was no transparency in the allocation of the new stalls, noting that the involvement of the so-called land barons is worrying.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
Katenda Gumbo gives us a closer look at challenges faced by children living with HIV.
Author and war veteran Freedom Nyamubaya has died.
And the death of Soul Brothers founder Deft Masondo shocks Matanga music lovers.
We've lost Mbatanga King, the leader of the Soul Brothers, known all over the world, internationally acclaimed. Like a soldier, he fell on the battlefield.
But first, we take a look at regional and international news.
In the latest sign that passion for football or soccer is growing in the United States, several hundred U.S. supporters gathered outside the White House on Sunday night to revel in the Women's World Cup triumph of their national team over Japan.
A Greek Finance Minister Yanis Yourofakis has resigned today, a day after Greek voters overwhelmingly rejected a demand by the country's lenders to impose more austerity measures on the country in exchange for new bailout laws for the loans for the government in Athens.
Officials in Nigeria say demanded that bombings at a mosque and restaurant in the central city of Jos had killed at least 44 people.
And an Iraqi jet dropped a bomb on an eastern Baghdad neighborhood today, killing at least 7 people in what the military described as an accident.
A HIV infection is a major threat to child survival and development in Eastern and Southern Africa, where 47% of the world's HIV-positive children live, says the United Nations Children's Fund, or UNICEF. Globally, pediatric treatment for children and adolescents has lagged behind, according to some reports, with deaths in adolescents aged 10 to 19 increasing annually as other age demographics decrease. UNICEF in Zimbabwe has been working with government and other stakeholders to scale up pediatric and adolescent antiretroviral treatment for HIV-positive children, who officials say are often left out of such programs.
Some challenges in adolescent treatment include the lack of identification of a child's HIV status, the reaction to learning about one's status, and the fear of stigma from peers and one's community. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo speaks to UNICEF HIV/AIDS manager Joyce Mupaya, who explains how Zimbabwe is working to overcome the access and treatment gap for adolescents.
In Zimbabwe, we have about 56% of adolescents living with HIV that are on treatment. So we still have a big portion of them that are not on treatment.
Can you explain what are some of the challenges that adolescents are facing when it comes to accessing directly these ARVs?
They are. So there are several issues. The first issue is the identification. You realize that some of the adolescents that are living with HIV, some of them were born HIV positive, but they were never identified when they were young because they never got sick. And the parents also don't know that they have got HIV. So eventually these children, they will live with the HIV without knowing they are HIV positive and only realize that they are HIV positive when they are sick in their adolescence. The second one is some of the adolescents, if you look at the 10 to 14, majority of them, they got the virus from their mother. And some of them have been on treatment from childhood. But some of the parents, they're finding it difficult to disclose to their children that they are HIV positive and that they are getting ARVs. So they will get the treatment ignorantly without knowing what they are taking until when they get to adolescenthood, and then they start questioning. And some of them, the moment they realize that the medicines are for ARV, they stop taking the medicines because I think they are angry, they don't understand why. Why should it be them that should have the virus? And then it affects them continuing treatment. So you see some of them, they will drop out. And with the moment they stop taking the medicines, they get sick, and you see some of them dying. The other challenge also that we've had is that the adolescents are living within the community where they know them in the community. And our services, it's just one clinic where everybody goes. So when the adolescents, as they grow to adolescents and they know they're HIV positive, they don't feel comfortable to go to the same area where they will know they'll meet adults from the same community who are going to know that all of us here are HIV positive. So eventually the adolescents will stop coming to the facility to come and collect the medicine.
How are you working with families and guardians to better assist them in letting children know that they are HIV positive and that this treatment is to help them live a longer life?
Yeah, so what we've done and the government of Zimbabwe has done is we've decided to find alternatives of identification of the children. So one of the things that is being promoted is we are conducting like HIV testing campaigns that we call Know Your Child's Status campaign. So we're going into the community, taking the testing at the community and ask parents to bring all their children for testing. So we are seeing parents bringing all the children for testing, and then eventually we are identifying the children that are HIV positive, which probably the mothers or the fathers didn't know. We are also using, like, for instance, for all HIV-positive mothers that come pregnant or even that come to the ART clinic, we are promoting what we call a family-centered approach. So if we find that there's a woman who's HIV-positive, we ask her if she's got other children apart from the pregnancy she has. And if she's got, we are requesting them to bring the other children for testing.
And for those out there who might need assistance, who might be interested in getting the information, how can UNICEF help them?
So what we want to do is a platform where UNICEF has created. It's called a U-Report platform, where young people can send in questions they have. And we want to use that platform where we should also be able to create a platform for adolescents living with HIV and have counselors who can respond to their SMS discussions or SMS questions. So we are trying to create platforms where anonymous adolescents can send anonymous questions, anonymous issues, and then a counselor can respond back, working closely with our partner. And then the SMS is free for the adolescent. So UNICEF pays for the SMS, but at any point, the adolescents are able to send messages and get information. But even in the district, what we now want to see is the minister to see how we can create that platform where adolescents or even parents should get any information they want.
That was United Nations Children's Fund HIV/AIDS manager Joyce Mupaya speaking with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo from Harare.
A 57-year-old author and war veteran Freedom Nyambaya died today at Chinoy Hospital after complaining of hypertension. Family spokesperson Julius Nyambaya said Nyambaya, who is survived by a son, will be buried Saturday. Nyambaya was known for her fearless stance on issues that affect women, especially ex-combatants. She had over the years criticized the abuse of female combatants during the War of Liberation in the 1970s, saying they should be compensated. Nyambaya wrote a poem titled For Susanna, which narrates the ordeal of a woman freedom fighter who was abused in the war front.
The wife of Zimbabwe's ambassador to the United States, Priscilla Mutembwa, has promised to help thousands of Zimbabweans living in the USA who may need assistance from the embassy. Studio 7's Praxedis Jeremiah reports.
Speaking at the close of Women of Dominion International Conference attended by 250 people yesterday in Cincinnati, Ohio, Mrs. Mutembwa said she will try to reach out to Zimbabweans living in the USA who normally face challenges in renewing their passports and accessing basic services. She said her husband, Mr. Amoni Machingami Mutembwa, has an open-door policy and promised to attend to the needs of all Zimbabweans regardless of their political or religious affiliations. Mrs. Mutembwa also urged women attending the conference, which started Thursday under the theme Ebenezer, to pray for the Southern African nation currently dogged by social, economic and political challenges. All sessions were flavored with music, mostly Zimbabwean language hymns, and sermons were also delivered in the same language. One of the most popular songs was the theme song, Ebenezer. Pastor Catherine Marurama, an international speaker who has traveled all over the world with unique and powerful anointing sessions on spiritual and financial prosperity, delivered a powerful spiritual sermon under the theme Rapture Ready. She warned the gathering that rapture is near, and so women should be ready when Redemption Day comes. There was also a fashion show in which a young lady, Edna Ndebele, showcased her line of creation of ethnic dresses, which were modeled at the conference. Edna says it hasn't been easy to start her own entity.
I just want to encourage everybody out there who has a dream, who has goals that they've set in their lives. It could be designing, it could be music, it could be school, whatever it is that you have set aside for yourself, Kuti. There's nothing that is impossible if you work hard.
Ministers of religion took turns to pray for conference attendance and people who did not attend the event, saying God is the answer regardless of the situations that they find themselves in. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, D.C., this is Praxedis Jeremiah.
In our sports segment, soccer fans have praised the Warriors for landing a slot in the next phase of the African Nations Championships despite chaos that dogged the national football team before clashing with the Comoros. Our reporter Michael Cariati has more.
Warriors supporters say they were surprised but happy that the squad managed to go past the Comoros, though they were stuck in Harare before traveling to Moron. Most of them say the Zimbabwe Football Association should put its act together to ensure that the Warriors do not face the same problem ahead of an encounter with Lesotho in the next round. Captain Benipiri said they hope to steamroll over Lesotho, especially in the home game, in which will be crucial in deciding the outcome of the two-legged match.
We're expecting to do the same thing against Lesotho. Come here at home, get a win, go there and finish the job in Lesotho.
Former Caps United defender Charles Mandjera said it was good that the Warriors won, and this would stimulate interest from the fans who have been used to defeat.
I'm very happy because when the nation does well, it benefits everybody from the bottom, from the junior level to everything.
Turning to the Castle Lager Premier Soccer League, the Castle Lager Premier Soccer League program rolled into week 15 with Caps United, the biggest winners of the week after a 2-0 win over leaders Chicken Inn. Goals from Leonard Fiado saw the Green Machine collect maximum points and move to fifth position on the league table with 24 points. Caps United supporter Zwanai Muroiwa said it was heartening that the Green Machine are back to winning ways.
I'm very happy that we collected maximum points.
The defeat, however, did not have much impact on Chicken Inn's position at the top of the table. They are a point above Triangle, who played a 1-0 draw against Highlanders at Baba Field Stadium. Now we turn to rugby. There were celebrations too in rugby after the Sables beat Tunisia 19-8 at Prince Edward School in an Africa Cup encounter. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Thanks, Michael. Condolences have poured from all over the world following the death of South African Batlanga legend David Masondo. Masondo, who co-founded the Soul Brothers in 1974, died at the Garden City Hospital in Johannesburg on Sunday. As Benedict Nhlapo reports from Johannesburg, many people say the world has lost a great musician.
The death of David Masondo has left many shocked and in tears. Masondo, who was the lead singer of the Soul Brothers, died after he was hospitalized when he felt extremely tired following a sterling performance. Many have described his death as a shocking loss. Moses Ngwenya, the only surviving founding member of the group, says Masondo will be greatly missed, but the Soul Brothers will not die.
Very bad, because we've been together with these guys for like 40 years. We liked what we're doing, you know, and playing the music. We really definitely think we'll continue with the name because that's a big brand.
The Soul Brothers manager, Bodloza Nzimande, described him as the best of South Africa's music talents.
He's a hero in as far as music is concerned, especially the music of this country, local music, especially traditional and Baganga music.
And South Africa's well-known poet Nzwakhe Mbuli says he should be counted among music kings.
We have lost Mbaqanga King, the leader of the Soul Brothers, known all over the world, internationally acclaimed. Like a soldier, he fell on the battlefield.
The Soul Brothers had soul-touching songs like Wambiza Umbiza. And others that could send the body into motion like Ilozi. And Zimbabwean gospel musician Marvelous Spanda says Mbaqanga will never be the same without Masondo.
Very good guy, my father, even a teacher to me.
Zimbabwean Mbaqanga lovers like Nkosini Chuma have saluted him for the influence he had on Zimbabwean musicians.
The Soul Brothers inspired a lot of musicians in Zimbabwe.
While people from all walks of life will have songs to remember, dished by Masondo and the Soul Brothers' third albums, there is no doubt that the blonde and beautiful will forever salute him for the songs like Wamuhle Mntwana Womuntu. I'm Reporting for Studio 7 in Johannesburg, this is Benedictine Chapo.
Thanks, Nhlapho. Listeners, please stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will be talking with listeners and experts about Zimbabwe's cabinet reshuffle. That's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Jonga Gandemiri, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.